Happy Monday, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Help for HD HD View. This is Melissa Biliardi, your host, and tonight our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1, and I'll cue you into the show. Please tell all your colleagues, friends, and family about Help for HD Radio and click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. You can listen to the show right from your iPhones and Androids. We are literally at 40,000, almost 600 listeners now, and that is thanks to you, our amazing listeners out there. And for those who may be listening that don't know what Huntington's disease is, HD is a hereditary and terminal disease which destroys neurons in the brain and slowly diminishes the affected person's ability to walk, talk, and reason. In time, they will rely completely upon others for everything. HD devastates entire families emotionally, psychologically, socially, and economically, generation after generation. Every child of someone with HD has a 50-50 chance of inheriting the gene mutation for both HD and JHD. JHD is juvenile Huntington's disease. It is more rapid and virulent, and these younger individuals experience many additional traumatic symptoms, decline in scholastic, adverse behavior, seizures, dystonia, and other very severe and painful conditions. Tonight, we have our incredible special guest is Jenny Davis. She is an oncology counselor and patient advocate for Mission Hope Cancer Center, and that's in Santa Maria, California. That's where we are. And she has been affiliated or worked for Marion Regional Medical Center at Mission Hope Cancer Center since 2007. And she has 20 years' experience in the workers' compensation field as a vocational rehabilitation counselor and elder care case manager. She has a great knowledge of community resources. She has coordinated and facilitated support groups, educational programs, and financial resources for cancer patients, their families, and caregivers. We welcome Jenny tonight. She is a caring listener and vetted caregiver support group leader. And we thank her for caring to share her life's work and experience with us tonight. Let's call on her experience and knowledge to help our Huntington's community today. And the philosophy is that all caregivers, whether for cancer or Huntington's, have the same issues of stress and face many of the same challenges in caring for their patients. So in a moment, we'll get to meet Jenny. For right now, we'll listen to the HD View soundtrack. We'll be right back. Thank you. And we are back. And tonight we have an amazing woman. I'm just so impressed with her. She's been working with caregivers groups and at the Mission Hope Cancer Center since 2007. And I'm very, very pleased to introduce Jenny. How are you tonight?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And it was kind of by chance that I met you, Jenny, at a wedding.
Yes, that's
that
true.
That was a very good thing. And I've heard about you for a number of years, and I've been meaning to go to your caregiver support group, but it's hard for me to get out of the house.
Right.
So, anyway,
you're welcome anytime.
Thank you. Let's before we get into the questions, because I sent you all the questions, but I'm thinking we need to talk a little bit about Marion Regional Medical Center at Mission Hope Cancer Center first, because I'd really like for you to tell us a little bit about who you work for and what you do there.
Sure, I would be glad to give you a few little facts on this. Mission Hope Cancer Center is the first integrated oncology facility on the Central Coast, and it's designed to enhance patient comfort, convenience, safety, and service. And what that really means is that for the cancer patients that are being treated here, everything is under one roof. So it's basically one-stop shopping if you have a cancer diagnosis. In the past, people who live in this community were having to go 4, 5, 6 different places to get the things done that they needed to get done, imaging, radiation, if that's what they needed, chemotherapy. With the advent of this Mission Hope Cancer Center building, they are able to receive all the services they need for treatment and support in this one building. And so, cancer patients don't really feel like doing a lot of running around. So it's great to have everything here, and I think that everybody who is being treated here feels the same way.
Yeah. Now, this is a new facility, right?
Yes. We opened last April, April of this year, 2012, after a long time of getting things ready to go, but it finally happened, and it's really great for all of our patients. We are a standalone cancer center. However, we are affiliated with Marion Regional Medical Center, and there is a medical oncology office here. There is a radiation oncology office here, as well as the whole medical team, including radiologists, pathologists. Our cancer center is here. We are a resource and support office to help the patients with whatever they need, with practical issues, financial assistance, mileage reimbursement. We offer a lot of classes and support groups, and we are just here for them to help them with whatever they need.
Now, do you have support groups for other types of cancers, or is it just cancer-specific, non-specific cancer?
Types of cancers. Yes.
Okay. And you're also. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
You're also a UCLA affiliate.
Yes, we are affiliated with UCLA, Johnson Comprehensive Cancer Center. It is an internationally renowned for innovative cancer care, treatment, and research. As a UCLA affiliate, we promote and facilitate participation in clinical trials, and we have the highest percentage of patients on clinical trials than any other UCLA satellite site in the nation.
Wow.
And we're very proud of that. Clinical trial offerings are administered by Central Coast Medical Oncology, The physicians there and other healthcare specialists collaborating with UCLA research nurses and coordinators. And this allows the patients to receive the latest treatment offerings without having to travel to Los Angeles.
Fantastic. Now, is this just for Santa Barbara County, or is it for tri-counties? Or
People that come to Mission Hope, people can be treated from anywhere at Mission Hope. You know, most of our patients are local. However, we are serving patients that come from San Luis Obispo County as well as Santa Barbara County. There are people who come here from far and wide, and we are happy to help anyone that can get here.
Great.
So,
that
yes,
great.
It's a nice feeling to be able to do that.
Yes. And as far as Mission Hope Cancer Center, it's, like you said, a one-stop, kind
mm-hmm.
of a weird way to put it, but a one-stop shop.
Mm-hmm.
So people can get nutrition information there, counseling.
Yes.
And that kind of thing.
Yes. We work with a registered dietitian who is able to educate people on nutritional issues, which can be, you know, pretty important when you're going through
right.
cancer treatment for a lot of different reasons. And so that is one of the services that we provide free of charge, as all of our services are free of charge. But yes, anybody can make an appointment to talk to our dietitian, and it's as easy as that.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, and you have children come there as well?
You know, we do not treat pediatric cancer cases.
Oh, you don't?
No, very rarely, but it is not the norm here. Most pediatric cancer patients either go to the tertiary centers or Santa Barbara Cottage Hospital. But yeah, we don't treat pediatric cancer cases here.
Okay, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then your support groups are right there in the building as well.
Yes. Uh-huh. Most of the support groups that we offer are right here in our conference room, which is right next to my office. And another piece of information. I hold an orientation class every Monday morning for new patients to give them information about everything that we offer here, all of our free services.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's great if people can attend the orientation, because they will have much more information than they would if they do not attend. And it really is information that can help them as they're going through their treatment as well as after they're done.
I bet they have more questions, too, after their orientation.
Oh, they do. Yeah, but that's
yeah.
good. We encourage them to ask, and I work with a wonderful team of nurses and other support people that that work with me in trying to help anybody that needs our help. So,
now I have noticed that we've had a number of Huntington's patients that have also had cancer. So
yes,
they're kind of dealing with a double whammy, and
yeah.
I wonder if you've come across that in your...
I have come across, in the 5 years that I've been here, I have come across a couple of Huntington's disease patients who also are dealing with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Difficult situation, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
but,
so tell us, you have quite a career path, so tell us what brought you to this field of work. Why counseling, and why patient advocacy?
Well, I spent many years working as basically an advocate for injured workers, people who were injured on their jobs, and so I was working in the California workers' comp arena, and these, you know, people who had work injuries were not able to work, and so were dealing with a lot of loss. In trying to keep financially solvent and keeping their families together, and You know, my job was to try to counsel them and help them in returning to work in some kind of a physically appropriate position. In doing that, I became what I call as a cheerleader. I was their motivation person. I was trying to keep them motivated to continue and not just give up. Got them into a training program, helped them in the job search process. So, and I loved that work because I was helping them and encouraging them to go forward instead of staying stuck. So the laws changed in California in 2004, making the bulk of that work go away. And so on a personal basis, I needed to, and I was self-employed, so I needed to find something that was going to allow me to continue paying my bills. And this position came up, and it was also going to afford me a lot of security, much more security.
Yeah.
Being self-employed is great, but I decided it was going to be good for me to have a little more security. So this position came up at Marion, and I interviewed for it and got the job. And I think I got the job because I didn't know much about cancer at the time, but I did know about helping people and encouraging people, and that's what I enjoy doing. So I learned about cancer, continue to be an advocate and a support for people that need that, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, one of our people in the chat room says his wife beat ovarian cancer this year, he says, mm-hmm. and then now he has HD. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's a big challenge.
I think, you know, cancer seems to be such a common thing anymore.
Yes, there is.
I don't know if it's lifestyle or...
Well, it's not any one thing, really. Mm-hmm. I think it's a combination of lifestyle, stressors in your life. You know, mm-hmm. we all need to get better at dealing with the stresses in our lives. Diet... Mm-hmm. It's a combination of a lot of things. You know, exposure to certain environmental toxins, and a lot of people will ask me, you know, why did I get cancer? What can I blame it on? Well, sometimes you really can't blame it on any one thing, which is hard.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in this world, there's just a lot of ways that. Unfortunately, then cancer can happen. So,
okay. So, tell us what you know. There are so many different kinds of caregivers, but what basically? How would you define what a caregiver is?
I think a caregiver, at the very, basic is if you're helping a loved one get through either a chronic health issue. Which might be emotional, it might be physical, but a caregiver, people may think that it's just something natural that you do. You may not think of yourself as a caregiver. You're just caring for somebody that you love. Mm-hmm. Many caregivers are family members, others are friends, but if you are helping someone to deal with like I said, an ongoing or a chronic health issue, you are a caregiver.
Whether you're related or not, right?
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. Caregivers can be spouses, they can be friends, they can be sons, daughters, nieces, nephews, grandparents. That caregiver can be anybody.
Sometimes I feel like I'm just not equipped to do... Seems like I'm not doing the right thing. Doesn't seem like I'm equipped. Is that normal?
That's a very common feeling. because I think the reason for that is that most caregivers are pretty much thrown into that position. Most caregivers are not, don't have training for this. Mm-hmm. It just kind of happens, and then you find yourself a caregiver. And it's just kind of a natural progression in a family unit. But even with friends, I think that a friend may offer to help somebody with something small, and then it kind of grows into something different and something bigger. And caregivers have a lot of a lot of issues thinking that they're not doing a great job and they should be doing better. But I think that caregiving you learn as you go along, and it's very important that part of that learning is to learn to take care of yourself, you know, at the same time that you're caregiving, which is very difficult for people.
Yeah, it is. Why do you think community-based education about caregiving is so important? Or about any subject, for that matter?
I think that people don't, in general, I'm not saying everybody, but I think in general people don't seek out the help that they need. They don't know where to find it, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of value in community-based education. I know that our center, we provide actually quite a bit of community education throughout the year in different areas. And even though a lot of it is cancer-related, people that are dealing with other chronic diseases can also apply the information that we are giving to their own situation. People don't have to have cancer to learn from the education that we are able to put out to the community. You know, for example, next year we already have some programs lined up, and one of them in January is a community education program on anxiety and depression. We have one in February coming, which deals with advanced directives and financial planning. Mm-hmm. You know, anybody can benefit from that type of program.
Right. So even though it may not be related to Huntington's,
yes,
maybe it's related to another condition or disease,
yes,
or disorder.
Right.
The tools that you would gain from going to these classes would be valuable for any situation.
Yes. Yes. I believe so. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, to vary our programs so that we you know, are offering a variety of different subject matters so that many are benefited. So
right. And then are you teaching these courses, or do you have other people?
We have speakers. We have various speakers that come in, various professional people that come in and speak on their areas of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
I do a program every year during the holidays dealing with how to manage grief and loss during the holidays.
Oh, I bet that's good.
Which is a good one. Mm-hmm. I usually do that in November. And so, you know, I have people attend that are not cancer patients or cancer caregivers. It's open to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So,
something that seems to be a little more difficult for people around the holidays with loss and...
Very much so, yes. The holidays are very hard for a lot of people, but, you know, I think even more so for people who are dealing with chronic disease. Or other things too, but I think that the loss that people are feeling during the holidays is magnified because mm-hmm. it's supposed to be such a happy time of year, and sometimes they're not feeling so happy.
Right.
And so then, you know, and that's okay, you know, and I try to tell people that most people during the holidays are probably dealing with issues. They may be, you know, a wide spectrum of issues, but the holidays just kind of magnify everything, and it's very difficult for people to admit that they're not real happy during the holidays, but it really is okay to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that, you know, you can talk about those feelings, hopefully, with your family or your friends, but it is a difficult time of year for many people.
Are there physiological reasons or just like being grumpy?
I think that during the holidays there are just so many expectations.
Mm.
Expectations that we put on ourselves, but also expectations from other people. And when you're not feeling well or when you're dealing with some, you know, other big issues in your life, sometimes you just don't feel like putting on that happy face, and but you're not supposed to feel like that. So there's a lot of guilt involved. You know, what's wrong with me? How come that person I'm seeing in the grocery store looks happy and I'm just not? You know, and I encourage people to remember that probably that person that you're seeing in the grocery store really isn't all that great, but you know, they're putting on their happy face, and that's okay. The thing I like to encourage people to do is to communicate and talk about their feelings and talk with their families about things that they may or may not want to continue as far as traditions or the way they've always done it, because things have changed, and I encourage people to be okay with changing traditions or knowing that it's okay to express sad feelings.
Mm-hmm. That's got to be hard too sometimes.
Yeah,
it's easy to talk about that, like mm-hmm. that's something that's easily done, but it's sometimes not easily done.
Yes, I
for
agree.
A person.
Yeah.
And
can be very difficult.
Yeah, it can be. And especially for those who are having issues with brain damage from
yes.
the Huntington's, you know, that's really
definitely
something that is very difficult to manage for the caregiver.
Right. Right.
I'm sure with any kind of disease, but it seems like if it's brain related, it's even more difficult.
Yes, I would think so too.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little bit about your caregiver group. I've heard so many good things about it from so many different sources, and how would one go about finding a group like yours, say if they're in another area somewhere, how would they find something like
this? Oh, well, that's a good question. I don't know. I started this group 3 years ago, I guess, because I just kept seeing a need. Caregivers just, they didn't have anywhere to go to talk about their feelings, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of caregivers don't want to talk about their true feelings in front of the person they are giving care for because they feel badly. And it's not to say that they don't want to be doing the caregiving, but they just need a place to vent
mm-hmm.
and to be with other caregivers who understand what their feelings are and what their struggles are, what their issues are. And so I decided to start promoting this and seeing what would happen, and you know, it was slow getting started. I only had a couple people for probably the first year, and then it started to grow, and I actually attended a seminar convention on caregiving, the family caregiver at the City of Hope
nice.
a couple of years ago, I think, and it was wonderful. And so I don't know. I think word of mouth. I think people started talking about it, and people and I talked about it all the time to the people that I came in contact with, and we've promoted it in our newsletter and in other different ways. But it seems to have caught on, and we are always having you know, one or two new people. I've got kind of a core group, but we always welcome new people. This group is not only for cancer caregivers, it's for all caregivers, dementia, Huntington's, Alzheimer's, stroke. excuse me, I need a sip of water here. As far as I think caregiver groups are hard to find. That's what I've heard. In talking to, in talking and follow up with the people at the City of Hope, they even have trouble getting people to their caregiver group. So that made me feel really good.
Oh, wow.
And so they have asked me, you know, how I'm doing this. And I think it's just really been word of mouth, and and I know that people in the group, when they come for the first time, they feel very supported, and they ask people to come with them, and so I think that's how it's gone. As far as finding caregiver groups, there are some caregiver websites, and I apologize to you, I don't have them in front of me right now, but if you get online and look at caregiver, there are quite a few. I know that AARP has a caregiver support. There is quite a bit out there, and I think that you could probably online look at your geographical area to find
We have an excellent, it's called Coast Caregiver Resource Center. And Erica Dixon is a fantastic facilitator, co-facilitator of my group. And, you know, we have Huntington's patients, but we also have caregivers. So what we did, and I think I told you about this, but what we did is we found an intern for the master's program at Cal Poly Psychology to come and work with the Huntington's patients, and then Erica is our caregiver leader.
Okay.
So we have the breakout group, which has really been fantastic, because the HD patients can vent and do, you know, talk freely within their group, and the caregivers, we meet in separate rooms so that, it, you know, far enough away to have some privacy, and it's just been really fantastic. We originally had started meeting at Marion Hospital or Marion Regional, but then our group has grown, and we needed two rooms, so we weren't able to get the two rooms there at Marion, unfortunately, because we really liked being there, but just couldn't accommodate the two groups.
Yeah, it is very important for caregivers to have a safe place. That's and when somebody new comes to our group, I make a point of telling them that this is a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
Anything said in the group is very confidential. It doesn't leave the room. And I think that they need to know that so they can speak freely, like you said. And, you know, there are a lot of frustrations. There are a lot of just a lot of issues that they deal with that they need to be able to talk about away from the person that they're caregiving for. So.
Okay, here's another question for you relating to caregiving. How can you be an effective long-distance caregiver?
Oh, that's a good question. A lot of people do this, and, you know, I think, thank goodness for email and the Internet and text, you know, all of the different ways that we have to communicate these days, I think that that has made it a lot easier to do long-distance caregiving. But that's difficult, and I think that a lot of it depends on how well the two people are, or the caregiver and person being cared for, how well they are able to communicate, and you know, the support that the person being cared for has wherever they live can be very frustrating for the caregiver, thinking that they're not doing enough,
mm-hmm.
That they can't help as much as they would like to, but sometimes that's the only option.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the caregiver may be able to find resources that the loved one could find where they live. but I think, you know, every situation is different, and I think it's just a matter of really communicating well and being able to communicate your emotions over the phone or however you're doing it. It, you know, it's difficult as it is, but doing it long distance is really difficult. The communication is the key.
Yeah,
and
possibly
being connected,
having
maybe,
an advocate nearby for them too.
Yes,
you can call on to check on them or whatever.
Right, and a long distance caregiver really also needs to have all of the phone numbers and contact information of medical personnel that they can talk to, doctors, nurses,
mm-hmm.
And those relationships can be fostered long distance. It just takes a lot, and it takes a lot of good communication. So,
yep. Mary Robertson in our chat room says family caregivers are ill prepared for their jobs.
Yes,
for their job
they
needs.
Are.
That's true.
They are. And like I said, they learn as they go.
Caregiver
and,
practitioner.
Pardon me?
Caregiver practitioner.
Yes.
Goodness. I know I've learned a lot, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, just being thrown into it.
Right.
One day I'm working at a winery, you know, or several, I worked for wineries before. Worked for a group of almost 200 wineries,
mm-hmm.
and the next day I'm caregiving full time, you know.
Right, and that's kind of the way it happens.
Bam, you know.
And the family caregiver is becoming more recognized, I think, because in this country and the way that our health system is now and has been for a while. The hospital stays are much shorter, and so it is necessary for family members to step up because the hospital stays aren't what they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the caregivers are thrown into this, and they may know nothing, but I can guarantee that after they've been doing it for a while, they know a lot. Because
yeah.
they have to. They don't have a choice.
Do you think that, coming down to the next set of questions, I was thinking about this, and when I wrote the question, I was thinking, of course, I was thinking about myself, because, you know, caring for my son, I mean, he was in the hospital 71 days out of a 19-month period having, you know, seizure-type attacks and pain, and it was just horrible, but... I felt like at times they looked at me like I was nuts, you know, the hospital staff looked at me like you're crazy. But I think toward that last part of the time that I was in the hospital with my son, because I stayed with him the whole time, I think they started to recognize me as, okay, she's not a cuckoo lady. She's really concerned about her son, and she's there to help us too. So I think that I was wondering if maybe caregivers are becoming more valued or recognized.
I think that they are, and I think that they are also becoming more educated because they realize they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that education may come from just, you know, dealing with it on a day-to-day basis, or they may seek out something like a caregiving group, or they may read about it, they may get online, they may go to the different websites. But I think that comes after some time. I think that when you are thrown into a caregiving situation, you really are starting from scratch. And and I think, I think that, your son was in the hospital for quite a few days during that time period, and so they get to know you, and they get the staff, they finally get to know how you're going to react to different things and how you're going to communicate, and that can only come over time.
That's true.
Because you're learning too, and so it's something that it just happens. It happens over time.
Right. I think a lot of our Huntington's people too spend a lot of time in the hospital. They have, quite a number of different complications, and so I think the caregivers have a tendency to become more active, more proactive with the staff and that kind of thing.
And that's another thing that...
natural progression.
Right, and that's another thing that I really promote to the people that I work with, which is, and patients and caregivers alike need to be strong advocates. More so than ever, I think, in our healthcare system, because... you just need to speak up. You need to ask questions. You need to be clear on things. And if you're not, you need to ask until you are. And so we promote that quite a bit here in our center for our patients as well as their caregivers, because that's how you are going to feel more comfortable about your treatment or the disease process. The unknown is pretty scary. The more information you have, the more you can deal with it.
That is true. Can you give us some words of wisdom, maybe advice, points of advice on, caregiving? How can we survive this caregiving thing,
Well, I think that you need to understand, it's very important that you understand your feelings. There is no right way for you to feel. Each person is different. The first step to understanding your feelings is to know that they're normal. Give yourself some time to think through them. There are some feelings that may come and go, such as sadness and anger and grief and guilt and loneliness. You may feel fewer problems, so you may tend to kind of isolate yourself. I think that it's best to look for help before you really need it, and know that if you are a caregiver, that, if you burn out, or if you crash and burn, who's going to take care of that loved one? So it's very important to be proactive about helping yourself. Asking for help is really okay. So many caregivers think they need to do it all themselves. It's very important to ask for help. How can others help you? They can help you with cooking and cleaning and shopping and yard work and child care and elder care. You may ask for help and you may not get it from everyone, but at least you need, it's good to ask, because you may get that help. It's very important to make time for yourself. It can make you a better caregiver. I tell my group that they need to find one thing every day that they can do for themselves. And it doesn't have to be a big deal. It can be taking a 15 or 20 minute walk. It can be watching a TV show that you want to watch. It can be going to a park or going to the beach and just looking at the ocean. Very simple things.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter how small it is. It's just very important not to neglect yourself.
Mm-hmm. What about sleep?
Sleep is huge. Sleep is important because if you're sleep deprived, very difficult to be able to cope with the challenges, the daily challenges. And so sleep is very important. If you can't sleep, maybe you could talk to your doctor about that. Or
mm-hmm.
Exercise is very important. Exercise can help you, can help with that sleep. Even if you take a walk, a short walk every day, it gets you out in the fresh
mm-hmm.
air.
Mm-hmm.
Important to care for your body, get enough rest, exercise, make time to relax. Eating well is also very important. Going to your own medical checkups, taking your own medications. Very important to really take care of yourself so that you can continue doing what you're doing.
Right. I have to remember to do that sometimes.
We all do. I'm included in that group, believe me.
Are you a caregiver too?
I was. I was for a couple of years. My mother-in-law was dealing with breast cancer, and unfortunately she passed away. She had a number of caregivers. It was kind of a group effort. I also had to remember that there's only so much that I could do, and that I needed to be, when I needed help, I needed to ask for the help.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you have a hard time doing that?
Asking for help?
Yeah.
No.
That's good.
No.
I know a lot of people
They do. People have a very hard time asking for help. And I couldn't do it all. I knew that. And I think that's an important thing is for everybody to know what their limitations are. Because there are a lot of caregivers who work full time, and there's only so many hours in the day that they have.
Right.
So I think it's very important to be able to ask for help and to be comfortable with that.
I think a lot of times, too, there's just not enough resources to work with for some of us,
That's true. That is true, yeah.
A little difficult.
Yes.
Jim Rice asks, from the patient standpoint, how can we be better patients?
Sweet. That's a good question.
And Mary has to go. Paul needs her. Okay, Mary, love you. Thanks for tuning in. Talk to you later. Bye, Mary. Anyway, Jim Rice, that was sweet.
Now that's a really good question. How do I be a better patient? That's something that that a lot of my caregivers talk about, is that their spouse or whoever it is they're caring for can be difficult. And I think that the person being cared for, sometimes I think that they, and I guess we all do this to some extent, show their worst side to the people that love them the most.
That is true.
And
we must take it personally, right?
Yeah, which is hard sometimes, but they do that because they know and they're confident that we're still going to be there.
Yeah, so they kind of take it a little advantage sometimes.
I think that the awareness on the patient's part to be as I don't know, the word escapes me. Not to kind of think that the caregiver is Superman or Superwoman.
Yeah.
Have a little of compassion for the caregiver or realistic expectations, because most caregivers are pretty busy. So and they want to be taking care of this person, but they get tired too, and sometimes they don't feel well. And so I think if the patient can realize that too, and again, communication between both is very important and can also help quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's not easy either, you know?
No, that's true.
And especially when they're real, real sick, then communication just becomes another issue that's difficult, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I know sometimes with my situation, I try to communicate and the words just aren't coming out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's not able to really vocalize what it is that's the matter, or, you know.
Right, and
I
then that, that becomes frustrating.
The mother, but.
Yeah, that becomes frustrating then for both parties.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you, Jim Rice, for that question.
Thank
that
you.
Was great.
That was a great comment.
That was a great question.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so when is the best time to get help? For the caregiver.
Oh, that was your original question, wasn't it?
Yeah. So when is the best?
The best time to get help is any time, really. But I think what I was trying to say was that don't wait until you are totally at the end of your rope.
Yeah.
You know, don't wait till then, because by then your frustration level may be so high that you know, things said can be damaging. And
so try to be a little proactive when it comes to
seeking
additional services or help from, you know, an agency or something like that. Don't wait until you're desperate and the walls are caving in, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And kind of seek out those services ahead of time, maybe.
Right.
And just
and talk to people that you come in contact, because, you know, ask them if they know of any, or call you know, call your resource offices in your cities and your towns, and just start asking questions. You have to start somewhere. And you know, one person may not have the answer you need, but they may be able to refer you to someplace else.
Uh-huh.
And it takes some work to find those resources sometimes, but if you start asking the questions, you eventually will find, hopefully, the people that can help you, mm-hmm. or the resources.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what kind of words of encouragement can you give us right now for caregivers?
I think, you know, I would like people, the listeners, to know that that you can affirm to and for yourself that you are doing the best you can.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all anybody can ask of themselves, is to do the best they can. I would encourage all of you to be not only a caregiver but a care receiver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, accept help from other people if they offer it. Be proactive about looking for ways to help yourself. You know that you are only one person.
Right.
And know
that.
Pardon me?
Speaking of that, what if you are only one person and there really isn't anyone within a family situation that could jump in and help out? So then go outside and see,
outside the
family unit and see what there is out there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can talk to some friends. You could, if you're involved in a church, you know, ask the church if they have any resources, community resources, like we talked about.
Do most of the hospitals have people that can help guide?
You know,
families
there are within the hospital there are social workers, but those social workers are usually, you know, there to support the inpatients. Once they're discharged, there are licensed social workers who are in private practice who might be able to help.
Maybe ombudsman type.
Ombudsman could, you know, might be able to help. I'm trying to think.
County, city.
You know, Department of Social, the Department of may be able to help you with referrals.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes you kind of have to get creative in looking for, you know, looking for help. But most cities or most most towns have a. And you might be able to get it through the either the Area Agency on Aging or they have, what do I want to say, not catalogs, but they have resource books that even if you're not a senior, you may be able to benefit from some of the resources that are in that book. And so you could ask about that.
Yeah, I think a lot of the information that I've really been able to utilize has been online. And then
and online,
through,
yes,
like
that's
health,
true.
The health department.
Right,
The county social services.
County, yes, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a lot of...
And again, you may have to start at point A, but, you know, after you ask some questions and it may get you to where you need to be to find what you need to help.
Right, and a lot of our community, by the time they're sick, they've lost jobs, they don't have insurance.
Right.
They're on right. disability or trying to get mm-hmm. on disability, having issues with getting on disability.
Uh-huh.
Fortunately, now we have the compassionate allowance.
Yes.
Through the SSA
yes.
that Huntington's
yes.
and Juvenile Huntington's are on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there are many conditions that aren't. So
right, that's true.
It's quite a challenge to get.
And that's a whole other that's a whole other show on.
Yes, it is.
Navigating
I
through that
you can
system.
Talk to us for another hour all about that, right? Being having 20 years experience with workers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, this has been a fantastic show. And do you have anything else that you wanted to add? Support group meetings?
My support group, my caregiver group, meets on the first Wednesday of the month, 6 to 8 p.m. at the at our conference center here at the Mission Hope Cancer Center building. Anyone is welcome.
Now can we contact you by email?
Sure.
What's the
yes.
best way? Can I put that out on the chat room?
Sure.
And the
mm-hmm.
show page and all that? Okay.
Sure.
So I just put your email in case anybody wants to.
Yeah, that would be fine. I'd love to have you.
And I still thank you for coming on the show.
Yes, well, thank you for having me. It's been great, and I want to encourage all the caregivers out there to seek help and seek support, because that's the way, that's the best way to do it, it's going to be the best way for you to be able to do a good job. So,
very good. Well, I'd like to also announce, we did our show last week with Dr. Jan Milton, Katie Jackson, and we have this awesome fundraiser going on right now. So, I just wanted to announce that real quick. Putting the link up right now. And Katie Jackson is an author. She wrote a fictional novel called Ferris Wheel. She's offering it for $5 as an ebook to download on the site, researchforhd.org/fundraising. And 100% of the net proceeds will be going to Dr. General to stem cell research. So I hope people will go there and donate $5 and get the download, or donate any amount, $5 or more, or whatever. But I do want to thank Jenny Davis for coming on the show tonight. This is a great caregivers show. This is my first caregiver show, so I'm really excited about that. I do thank you so much, and hopefully I get to go to one of your meetings soon. And
I would love to have you along with anybody else that wants to come with you.
Great. Okay. I'll see if I can get some people to come with me. Don't forget to contact me at helpforhdinternational.org or find us on Facebook, Help for HD, the HD View. Come back and listen to the recorded episodes. Get the free On the Road Help for HD app at helpforhdinternational.org. Also available on the app is the original mobile connection to education resources and information about JHD and HD. And thank you again, Jenny Davis, and good night, everyone. Jenny, I'll put us in the screening room, and we'll talk for a minute, and I'll have a little song for y'all out there. And Jim Rice, your sweetheart, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and we will talk to you soon.